pale purple upland waste. She could not escape being involved in whatever befell Cottonwoods. That year, 1871, had marked a change which had been gradually coming in the lives of the peace-loving Mormons of the border. Glaze, Stone Bridge, Sterling, villages to the north, had risen against the invasion of Gentile settlers and the forays of rustlers. There had been opposition to the one and fighting with the other, and now Cottonwoods had begun to wake and bestir itself and grow hard. Jane prayed that the tranquility and sweetness of her life would not be permanently disrupted. She meant to do so much more for her people than she had done. She wanted the sleepy, quiet, pastoral days to last always. Trouble between the Mormons and the Gentiles of the community would make her unhappy. She was Mormon-born, and she was a friend to poor and unfortunate Gentiles. She wished only to go on doing good and being happy, and she thought of what that great ranch meant to her. She loved it all. The grove of cottonwoods, the old stone house, the amber-tinted water, and the droves of shaggy, dusty horses and mustangs, the sleek, clean-limbed, blooded racers and the browsing herds of cattle, and the lean, sun-browned riders of the sage. While she waited there, she forgot the prospect of untoward change. The bray of a lazy burro broke the afternoon quiet, and it was comfortingly suggestive of the drowsy farmyard and the open corrals and the green alfalfa fields. Her clear sight intensified the purple sage slope as it rolled before her. Low swells of prairie-like ground sloped up to the west. Dark, lonely cedar trees, few and far between, stood out strikingly, and at long distances, ruins of red rocks. Farther on, up the gradual slope, rose a broken wall, a huge monument looming dark purple and stretching its solitary mystic way, a wavering line that faded in the north. Here, to the westward, was the light and color and beauty. Northward, the slope descended to a dim line of canyons, from which rose up an upflinging of the earth, not mountainous, but a vast heave of purple uplands with ribbed and fan-shaped walls, castle-crowned cliffs, and gray escarpments. Over it all crept the lengthening afternoon shadows. The rapid beat of hooves recalled Jane Witherstein to the question at hand. A group of riders cantered up the lane, dismounted, and threw their bridles. They were seven in number, and Tull, the leader, a tall, dark man, was an elder of Jane's church. "Did you get my message?" he asked curtly. "Yes," replied Jane. "I sent word I'd give that rider Venters half an hour to come down to the village. He didn't come." "He knows nothing of it," said Jane. "I didn't tell him. I've been waiting here for you." "Where is Venters?" "I left him in the courtyard."
"Here, Jerry," called Tull, turning to his men. "Take the gang and fetch Venters out here if you have to rope him."
The dusty-booted and long-spurred riders clanked noisily into the grove of cottonwoods and disappeared in the shade. "Elder Tull, what do you mean by this?" demanded Jane. "If you must arrest Venters, you might have the courtesy to wait till he leaves my home, and if you do arrest him, it will be adding insult to injury. It's absurd to accuse Venters of being mixed up in that shooting fray in the village last night. He was with me at the time. Besides, he let me take charge of his guns. You're only using this as a pretext. What do you mean to do to Venters?"
"I'll tell you presently," replied Tull. "But first tell me why you defend this worthless rider."
"Worthless?" exclaimed Jane indignantly. "He's nothing of the kind. He was the best rider I ever had. There's not a reason why I shouldn't champion him, and every reason why I should."
"It's no little shame to me, Elder Tull,